I would not recommend trying to cycle in water or through
I can
water
say,
too much.
is that the being the Charlie Chaplin or doing the bicycling underwater? Which of those did you attempt?
Well,
yeah, Charlie Chaplin was all right, wasn't he? Yeah, he was a quick learn, let's put it that way. Yeah, I taught him everything he knew, but came so nicely. But the thing I struggled with using AI, which we'll get around to defining and talking about in a moment, is kind of actually kind of giving the right prompts. And at the moment, I'm not in the position to, and I'm not prepared to actually pay for more use. I get a bit of free use from it. I use Canva as well, and that's got a kind of a bit of an AI, and that will give some. And there's no kind of, as far as I know, with the free one, there's no kind of credit limit on that, as there is with DALL-E. But actually, getting the thing that's in my head,
What about in the
based
Photoshop
on
world?
that, I struggle with it.
Haven't you got
I've got a
Adobe Creative
Photoshop, but
Cloud?
I've not actually played with Photoshop very much with that. I have to admit. I think I've installed the version with that on that, because initially it was a beta, but I haven't actually picked Photoshop up to do that. I mostly use Lightroom when I'm messing around with photos, and that's become so much more powerful now, which is possibly something we might dip into, because that's kind of a bit of a makery thing. I mean that's a whole, AI in photography is kind of probably a whole series of podcasts in itself. And there's a lot of discussion to be had with that, but there's certainly an overlap, I think, into the maker world, and that is something I think, that's where we're kind of going to concentrate.
Should we change the term to the generative world?
I like it.
Well, I will bow to your kind of expertise, guys, because I'm gonna put it out there right at the start here. I've been using tech and computers for a long time, but I'm very much in the kind of good user, not expert user in a lot of stuff. I'm not. I started spreadsheets with Lotus 1-2-3 version 1, and I've spent my most of my career kind of messing around with spreadsheets, particularly playing around with kind of computers and stuff. But I would not call myself an expert in any way, particularly amongst the current company. I know you guys know an awful lot more about tech and IT stuff than I do, and I will have asked various of you for information and help on numerous occasions, and no doubt will continue to do so, because I know when to ask people for help. I know enough, but I know I can't generally cause too much problems with computing. I know enough to not to kind of go, oh, format, yeah, I'll just carry on, yes, yeah. And, yeah, I'm the sort of person that people turn to at home, kind of like, oh, the printer's not working, this isn't working, what do you? But yeah, I know my limits, and certainly AI, I have limits on how much I've used it and how much I know about it. So,
Well, you said the term IT stuff because it is kind of IT stuff at the moment. It's really like niche. Apart from the flashy headlines, it's probably a fairly small group of people that are really into sort of what's going on with AI things at the moment. But it's not going to stay that way for long.
Nope.
It's not going to be IT stuff for much longer, I
No.
don't think.
All this IT stuff will just be the here's an interface to access the thing, and that'll be it.
At its core, I mean, ChatGPT's major strength is the is its language skills, the ability to interpret what random nonsense we do and then direct it in an appropriate way. There's lots of little subsystems sit underneath ChatGPT that make it, little things it's learned how to do. But the
It's not
major
just a
advantage
group of squirrels in
is
a
the
trench coat.
language. I mean, shush, you're not supposed to crack that. Don't talk
I
about
threw
Tofty. Seriously.
I threw penguins.
I'd imagine there's a hell of a lot of penguins in the
bunch of penguins and of monkeys, so key at typewriters. Yeah. That's, that's what's happening over here.
It's going to be lots of penguins called Tux.
It's a room full of an infinite room full of an infinite number of monkeys at an infinite number of typewriters.
Exactly. And, it's just and that's a, why it's you get an entire Shakespearean sonnet output eventually, you know?
Yeah.
Or the band name Chumbawamba.
Or the band name
Chumbawamba. That's where it came from.
Excuse me. So you must have questions, though, Mr. Pugh.
Well, let's start off with
as the teacher in the room, you know, yeah. There must be questions for the class.
You know? Well, I got ChatGPT to produce a bunch of questions for us.
Oh heck!
I'm going to start off with first of all, just by kind of for the benefit of the audience, AI, what is it?
I know
we can go into really, 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 really deep stuff. Let's consider the fact that we
want to. It's not what the letters stand for.
It's actually pronounced I, and it's a generalized acknowledgement in Scottish.
I thought AI was actually spelled ML generally.
Ah, so that's an interesting twist, you know. Because, I mean, you could describe it, you know, AI is a wonderful collection of stuff. You know, I mean, there's machine learning, there's deep learning, and then there's the generative capabilities that sit underneath that with the relevant language models. So I guess the question is, how do you want to frame it? Because there's kind of two pieces to that, you know. There's a digital wingman. That can help you discriminate from this is real, this is good, this is useful. And then there's generative, which, you know, really is all about taking things it's learned and from the language you've fed, try to output something based on what it's learned across the way. I mean, we can talk about neural networks, but we'll back off from that for the minute because that's just the infinite room with the monkeys or squirrels called Tufty. And how the weighting works across those. So I don't know how to answer your question quickly and succinctly, which proves I'm an IT guy.
Again, stop giving away the secrets.
Shh, don't let the smoke.
Is it fair to really sort of summarize and say it's a digital process of producing something new without it being told to produce that thing specifically?
That would be classed as unsupervised or semi-supervised in terms of that, because you've got fully supervised, which is, that's a dog. I'm telling you this is a dog. What do you think it is? I think it's a dog. I've now given you a picture of a cat, so that's discriminative. Generative kind of semi or fully unsupervised, where it's kind of learned a bit of that's a dog, so I'm going to have a crack at drawing a dog. So it's a bit between the, you know, so it depends. So there's wingman that helps you say, no, this is a dream. And then there's the ability to generate based on examples that it's had before and in principle, you know, I mean, make those. You know, there's a wonderful, I mean, simplifying it, it's kind of a probability distribution. You know,
just a between big group of if statements, input. Isn't it?
Yes, a big list of if statements.
there's a lot it's, of dodgy it's quite, marketing it's quite out there
complicated.
Going.
There's a yeah. It's quite complicated, and to take that generative story. But in principle, it's about I've learned a bunch of stuff. I now understand how that probability works, and now I'll have a crack at doing the same thing, just like people do.
Yes.
Yeah, the kind of the visual cool. I have in my head is the
a
kind
room full of monkeys,
you know, the
with hammers.
Well, no, you know, the when you look at like the genus of the animal kingdom. And you see that kind of flowchart as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger from a common ancestor out to weirder and weirder looking animals.
Oh, the tree. Yeah, the tree of
life.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's kind of in my head how I see AI, as that kind of almost.
So in a neural network sense, you're on the right, you know, and the visualization isn't wrong, but you've kind of got a bunch of weighted inputs,
yeah, you
know, which is one layer, and then you've got a hidden layer, and then you've kind of got an output layer of those neurons, you know, at its absolute simplest. There's some fantastic drawings that talk about this, and there's some fantastic courses, free ones from Google, go learn. Yeah, so that, I mean, like I said, the principle is of a neuron, you've got an input, you've got two outputs, and you weight the output, and slowly over time, you have a collection of those neurons in a network. And when a particular trigger happens, the pathway opens up to take it to a result. At its simplest, I think, you know, probably draw that quick. Someone get a sketch.
At its simplest, but there's a huge number of inputs and a huge number of connections. You can get
quite a small network to do some amazing stuff. There's one called Libra Translate, which you can download, which does language translation. And it's written in Python, so it's not that complicated to kind of have a look at if you're a techie. You can download it as a Docker image, spin it up in your local machine, and it's as good as Google Translate, and it's free. So there's a neural network. It's really a machine learning sort of supervised, semi-supervised neural network, in that it's learned the input and has a best guess at the output, but it comes pre-trained. So it doesn't really have that feedback loop where it takes the, you know, it takes the weighting and puts it back into the model and eventually reaches the best conversions. In your care, it's kind of trained by someone else to do that.
So, I mean, is there a real benefit in using something like that? But, you know, in that sense, is there already a free, hugely capable, accessible service out there to do that? So why in that case?
So in my case, you might not want to share what you've done with Google. So one of the great things about using the big open ones is you're training their models. Ultimately, if you're ChatGPT, there's a wonderful example of when ChatGPT first came around. The guys at Samsung started to use it to do some work for them, and that made all that data publicly available. You know, so it's not so much the translation, but it's the input to the translation. You may not.
It's
want
not
to
only the privacy thing, but these models are getting smaller and smaller. And faster, yep, and faster. Before long, you know, you'll have this translation model on your phone. You don't need internet access. You don't need to call another service. It's just there, ready to use immediately.
The best example, I think, of like that is Stable Diffusion. You know, Stable Diffusion, you can download yourself. You can run it in your home PC. I'll use the GPU on the graphics card to do.
For anyone who doesn't know, Stable Diffusion is an image generator.
DALL-E generator, yeah, similar to DALL-E. In Stable Diffusion, you can run your home PC. And if you're running your home PC, you could probably run it on an iPhone. Probably, you know, the amount of memory you have inside that, you know, on that graphics card is probably the ultimate limiting factor at the moment. But the Translate one for us, we deployed it into the field because on a ship at sea, you've got, you know, pre-Starlink days, you've got 9.6 kilobits, and you've got a Chinese cook who understands Chinese because it's a Chinese crew, and he has to translate what he has into something he can send to shore in the international language of English to be able to order the ingredients for the next port he puts into.
So yeah, that makes sense. From a
closed environment, yeah.
Yeah, from a closed environment point of view, yeah.
Yeah, so that works really well. And that's a basic neural network with a pre-learned model available for whoever. But that has nothing to do with, I suppose it has to do with making, in the sense it's making, you know, the brains cooking, I guess. I wonder if we should try with Welsh.
So let's
try for Welsh cakes.
the making side of things. Welsh cakes, I'm not going down that. I'm not taking that bait. So you mentioned basically there's at the moment there's two kind of directions that AI can go. There's the wingman and there's the generative style thing. Let's start with
there's the wingman. So there's kind of two. There's the there to help or there to act. You know, it's kind of at its core. This is the big, you know, I mean, they're out to kill us kind of conversation. They're there to advise, they're there to help, ultimately makes you the arbiter of the action. Those that can interact with the real world are, you know, I mean, much more able to affect us. You know, that doesn't necessarily make a bad thing. You know, I'm buying some lawnmowers. I've got AI in them, so they don't cut up my dog. But hey, you know, I mean, you've got this basic scenario here where, you know, the ones that can affect the real world directly, and those that are much more informative or at your command and control, and ultimately you're the arbiter of what happens next. You know, so everything ChatGPT does right now, you're the arbiter of what happens next.
So it's kind of the difference between a maker looking on YouTube to find out how to do it and then doing it themselves, or calling in a professional to do it for them.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. But in some respects, it's, you know, I mean, you can. So the good example is autopilot, probably, I think. And if you get a Tesla, you know, here you have an AI system that's making, which is really a, we'll use the term AI for the purposes of the conversation, but it makes a decision about what's going on around about it, what speed you're doing, whether it should change lanes and all that kind of good stuff. And it's affecting how the vehicle's doing stuff in the real world, you know. Whereas if it was saying, turn left, this is the best route, honest gov, there's a truck behind you, watch yourself. You know, it's much more in an informative sense. I think that guy behind you kind of thing isn't going to indicate when he changed lanes. Just because I've learned that's the kind of behavior he's exhibited to date, I don't think he's going to indicate. It's much more that informative wingman style. Whereas the car being able to know that he's not going to indicate changing lanes, so I better stay still and not change lanes. It's much more on that. I'm interacting with the real world. You know, okay. In a maker sense, you could argue one of them is exactly to Jamie's point. Here's how I do something. How do I make a coffee table using axes and flints? Versus, you know, being able to write the G code for the CNC that spits it out and then get the CNC to produce it. You know, all you had to do, if anything, is put the lump of plywood on it.
It's Google and YouTube versus Jarvis.
Yes.
Make me an Iron Man suit.
It's a remarkably good way of putting it. It's far more intelligent than we can describe it than all the ones I've used today. I'm really living this waffle thing, aren't I?
That's what you get for standard information of it.
So, Duncan, you mentioned, I think, in the pre-chat that you've used, or you know of people who've used, again, I'll use the term AI, to write code
for stuff. Yeah, that's really common. I use it. Oh, write G code. Okay.
Was it G code? I think you mentioned. Code.
So G code is the language of CNC machines, 3D printers, and any kind of machinery that moves is quite often it's going to run G code, laser cutters, that kind of thing. And yeah, the ChatGPT can produce G code at a basic level. So it's learned that from somewhere. It's been trained to some extent as to what G code is and how that translates into a physical thing, right? Because if you say to it, write me G code to cut out square on a CNC router, it will produce something. Whether that something's any good or not is questionable because it's not really its main purpose. But it will do it. It will produce G code right now. So you can go and ask it now and it'll produce it. So I don't think it's a huge stretch that that would become a thing in the future.
I mean, I've heard of people using it to write basic Arduino scripts but
language models are fantastic at code. They're very, very good. Very, very good at code. There's a product from Microsoft's GitHub called Copilot. And that, as Dale said, is an assistant. It won't write code for you, but it will make some very, very good suggestions. And think of it like autocorrect, but super powered. Very, very good at it. Yeah, language models are very good at writing code.
Yeah, I think a lot of paper clippy and not being so annoying.
Yes.
The clipping you asked for.
I use Copilot daily. It's fantastic. And I've used it a lot as a learning tool as well, because it will make suggestions, and most of the time I'll recognize what it's going to do, but then it occasionally, now and again, it throws out something new and I'm like, I didn't know I could do that, or I didn't know I could do it that way, or, you know, it's something new to me, and I just go, and then I'll go away and look it up, or I'll ask it, because now there's a Copilot chat and I can say, well, what does this mean? Why do it this way? Why write this piece of code? And I'll get an explanation. I can go into my code editor and highlight a piece of code and say, explain this. Yeah. Or write
without,
me a
without
test
copy and
for
pasting.
This. Yeah. Yeah. It's all integrated now.
There's a tool set we use, which name will come back to me as the show's on, which we use to generate testing scripts. So what it does is the one of the great problems is if you're ever in software development, you know, it doesn't matter who's writing the code, you've got to test it. And particularly if there's going to be like user interactions with the UI. So having the thing design synthetic transactions and design, you know, I mean, automated responses, hunting for what we used to call the Mark II idiot, because you can always outthink the Mark I idiot. The Mark II idiot comes along and just checks and like that.
Is that one of those where you've got to be really specific in the prompt, of like, pretend you're an absolute moron, and then more of a moron.
That's it. You're looking for real someone who doesn't think like. Find me, so do an impression of someone who doesn't understand IT, really, because otherwise we all kind of know, well, we know what that hamburger menu is for. We know that you don't wave the mouse in the air like this. So using the AI to generate the testing scripts and work around the nuances of what people might do allows you to get there quicker. There's a comment in the chat from Electronic Scraper says, so, and I've got to get this one in because this just amuses me. He says, at what point do we consider AI self-aware? I only become self-aware when I, you know, when I fart a room full of people. I just want to lay that out there. So I'm not sure, you know, when AI can fart, I think that's probably your answer, you know?
Yeah. Or when Captain Picard has a big legal battle against Riker. That's about the point.
Yeah. At that point, kind of thing, when the machines start arguing with them about, you know, I mean, you're not getting Earl Grey. I'm tired making Earl Grey, you know, for you. You know, stop it. Let me make you a latte. Come on, let me make you a latte. How about a bit of toast?
Oh my God. Yeah, that is the future that needs to happen.
So if we get 3D printer, yeah, we just want something that's going to make us toast. Yeah.
Well, no, we don't want a toaster. I've seen Red Dwarf. We don't want a toaster.
I was going to say
that makes any kind of bread.
Yeah, the toaster from Red Dwarf is the ultimate irritating AI model.
This is that. What the smeggy going to do?
Okay, so we've got AI that can help us. For those of us that do maybe things with electronics, we've got AI that can help us write code scripts for things like Arduino. So if we want a particular pattern of flashing lights, if we have a 3D printer or a laser cutter or CNC, we can use it to perhaps generate G code. Although, well, I might argue there are systems already that perhaps we do we necessarily need that? Is there is is that something that the average CNC laser 3D printer is going to use, or are they just going to grab a model they've made in Fusion 360 and just rush it through a slicer?
Before you carry on, I'm just going to highlight 3D printers, right? There are all four of us have 3D printers of some sort. If you had said a similar thing 20 years ago, oh, well, 3D printers are a thing, but they cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. Do we ever think anyone's going to want one in their office, really? I mean, you know, that would be a reasonable thing to say.
I mean, 20 years ago. There might be a computer in every city.
I mean,
there might be. Is anyone going to need that? Is anyone going to want that? The answer is always going to be yes. If it's possible, then yes.
Is anyone going to need more than 640K? I mean, really, are they?
famously, the guy in, was it head of IBM back in the 60s, said we don't need to be worried about. No one's going to want a computer in their home.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oddly, he's probably right when you look at Alexa and you look at cloud computing and you look at, you know, I mean, he's oddly, you know, edge compute is an entire topic. You know, how you balance edge compute from centralized cloud compute is an interesting topic all in itself. But if I might answer your question, you can use, I mean, I spent a bit of time on this, which is how do you use generative AI to design scroll saw pictures? You know, so here you get something that's an entirely
okay. So moving, system. So moving now from the kind of wingman, to the generative side.
Well, still wingman, collaborative partner on the journey towards creation. I think, you know, I mean, that sounds like someone that designs Beatles for God. Anyway,
Your wedding vows.
This is a kind of thing. But you've got that idea that one of the things that's interesting for CNC people. And for a lot of scroll saw people, is they have low artistic talent, but they love the experience of making. And there's they buy scroll saw patterns, or they buy, you know, cabinet designs or things to make on the CNC, or that creative process is somewhat, you know, I mean, lost on them. They can describe what they want. But the iterative process of design, of being able to make it real in the real world, is challenging. You know, they have that creative spark, but how to turn it from idea to something they can make is lost. You can use, you know, I spent probably, you know, I mean, 5 or 6 hours one day just tinkering around, trying to do a scroll saw picture with it. And after a bit of working out how to present the question, you can produce scroll saw pictures using generative AI. You know, I mean, not the picture, but the pattern you would use to cut it and create it. And it's a very small step from that to, okay, now write me the G code so I can cut up my laser.
And that already exists, right? If you've got
100%.
Fusion 360 will take an image. And you, at the moment, you physically have to trace that image. But anyone who's used Inkscape will know that it can pick up a vector from a silhouette, right? And then Fusion can turn that vector into a cut path. So that kind of tool chain, that process, kind of already exists, but all the pieces haven't quite been put together yet.
But like Inkscape is open source, so I wonder if there's a way of command line linking build of Inkscape that is entirely
all right, folks, get Visual Code out. Let's make it happen,
right?
Group project.
Yeah, it's actually an achievable one as well.
Yeah.
Damn it, Jamie.
He's off clicking. Look at him. I'm sorry. For those that can see. We can see Jamie's glasses. He's got GitHub up.
Yeah. Chat GPT, and then I think there's going to be a damn it, Jamie is going to be the next.
Yeah.
For the benefit of perhaps those who aren't in kind of IT familiar, GitHub has been mentioned a couple of times. Now, I'm know what GitHub is. Probably, again, not to the depth that you three.
It's a special center. So if you know what a men's shed is, right, which is a positive influence in men's lives, a GitHub is, you know, I mean, that kind of pub like the Winchester kind of thing where they all gather at lunchtime kind of thing for a pint and swear a lot. That's a GitHub.
GitHub is like a Pornhub for nerds.
Yeah, old GitHub. Sorry.
And it's simplest. It's somewhere for people to share their coding projects. That's probably enough.
Thank you, Duncan.
Very, very intelligent and well presented.
Nerdstagram, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or Thingiverse for code.
Yeah,
those for the three source printers. Board.
I always thought of SourceForge as more like Thingiverse, I guess, you know, back in the day. Yeah. I'm sure my age now.
Filled with half projects, lots of untested things. And
all of my stuff is on SourceForge still. Actually, that's not true anymore, is it? Oh, a whole bunch of my stuff sits in Git. Yeah. Anyway. There used to be loads of stuff on SourceForge. Loads of stuff. You know, but not so much anymore. Yes.
We veered off down a sort of bit of a nerdy route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's try and get back to so for the average, let's maybe slightly different sort of tangent for a moment or a little while. The non-techie folk, so not the sort of people who've already got a GitHub account or are likely to want a GitHub account.
For the models.
One way of putting it. But obviously somebody who's, for people who perhaps, whether they do things with that involve digital tech making, so 3D printing, laser, or whether it's people who are, what a better phrase, maybe analog makers, yeah, so the sewists, the artists, the sculptors, the woodworkers, the wood turners. What are the benefits about known about AI now? What are the possibilities that AI will present to them? I mean, Dale, you've mentioned kind of, you know, generating scroll saw art. That, you know, something you can kind of go, I'm not, I don't particularly call myself artistic. And sometimes I've got kind of ideas for this sort of things and I can't find, you know, say a piece of scroll saw art. Or I'm not happy with the thing that I've rendered using a piece of paper and a pencil. But yeah, so, I mean, starting there, I mean, then are there other...
Research is probably a good one in that if you want to look into a particular topic, I think we all realize that if you want to Google something, if you want to search for something online, you've got to have the right terminology before you even start looking for it, right, really. Especially if it's quite niche. So, Google searches can be difficult if you don't really know exactly what you're looking for. Yeah. Whereas something like a language model, it can do much better at interpreting what you mean.
So a language model is something like ChatGPT.
Like ChatGPT can find meaning behind your words. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that exact terminology already, figured out, start with ChatGPT. Something we're making quite a lot of use of at the moment is Bing Search and Bing Chat, because they have Bing is Google, is Microsoft's equivalent of Google, Google Search, and it's got ChatGPT built into it.
4, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, so they're on version 4 now. But Bing Search is really handy because it's not only a language model, it's also tied into search as well. So you could combine the benefits of ChatGPT with an internet search, and it's great for that. So for researching stuff, if you're looking into something that's a little bit more niche, or you're not quite sure what you're looking for, then I'd say go to Bing search immediately and use that.
That is built in free to your Microsoft Edge browser on your Windows PC.
I was just going to ask, that's not...
Or you can use it in Chrome as well. It's just the Bing search website. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a little chat icon at the end of the search bar, and you click that and you can have a conversation with an internet search, which is amazingly useful.
I think the thing to add on to that, Duncan, as well, the you and I have both been, well, as all four of us here have been the people that friends come to when they've got a question and haven't had a successful internet search. You know, it's like, what's that thing called on the end of the thing that does the hoojima flip and the, what's it called? You know, it's...
The whatchamacallit.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing that... If you don't know what it is you're searching for, if you don't know the specific terminology, it's then very difficult to do like a normal web search. But it's that thing that, you know, asking the person who knows or is in the industry or has worked with that tool before or worked with that particular medium before, we tend to, as makers, reach out to those people and ask them a question, what's that thing called that you're holding in the video or stuff like that. Whereas, that's where these large language models like Bing Search and ChatGPT and things are really good for that. So it's, you can have a conversation with it as if you're having a conversation with a professional expert or a friend or stuff like that. And that's what's the accessibility jump between that and trying to do a web search or a YouTube search or something like that.
Something that I've a little bit of myself, but and something that with large language models like ChatGPT, and I've heard of other people doing, is kind of almost a maybe not quite research, but kind of extending from that, is kind of looking for suggestions. So I use it. I kind of had an idea for another podcast, which was kind of associated with kind of, yeah, my career, STEAM, you know, sort of science, technology, education, engineering, mathematics, art, and that kind of thing. I'm thinking about that. And it just kind of bugged me that I couldn't think of a good sort of title. I had a few ideas. And so I actually kind of took a couple of the keywords that I was thinking of, gave it to ChatGPT, told it what I was wanting, and it came forward with kind of, you know, 10 ideas within 10 seconds,
good for stuff,
and then I could say, look, give me another 10 and then another 10 and then another 10 and I 50-60 ideas, most of which were kind of not of any use, not ones I would consider, but there were quite a few that was like,
no worse than having a chat with a group of mates and asking them, just quicker.
And less sarcastic.
ChatGPT doesn't drink whiskey, so you know, I mean, there's no fun in that. Get it drunk. That would be fun. Get ChatGPT drunk.
Yeah, sort of starting off points like that are a good use case for it. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like for brainstorming kind of words. I found that quite useful.
Branding ideas and generating logos and
descriptions kind of videos.
You might not always get the like exact right answer that you want, but it'll almost certainly give you somewhere to start.
And it's great for being able to get an idea out of your head to then pass on to someone else. You know, if you're looking for something like a logo, to be able to say, here's what I'm looking for, into the large language model, get something that's vaguely close back out, and then say to a professional, can you make a better version of this? Without having to do the whole process of going, oh, well, I've got this kind of idea, and then I've got this, and now I think maybe with this, and you know, you can very safely get things wrong without feeling like an idiot in front of someone who you're trying to ask for help in that sense.
And for those who need to, another one, just kind of maybe going off slightly on a tangent. For those who are involved in organizations such as MedSheds or makerspaces, things like that, where you have to write things like old risk GitHub. Assessments.
We've got to start all
yeah, or the old GitHub, yeah. if you have to write things like risk assessments or policies on things, and if you're not familiar with writing risk assessments or actually just want to save yourself a stack of time, I've heard of people kind of using sort of ChatGPT quite successfully.
We did it at the makerspace. Well, I wasn't directly involved in writing all the risk assessments and stuff, but I did suggest to the guy, here's a few examples, and just suggested, look, throw it into ChatGPT, because he wasn't used to writing them. There's something that just has to be done. They're not much fun. If you can get ChatGPT to do the bulk of the work and then you just add a few refinements, then that's great. Stuff like that,
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
so there's we had a very interesting it's interesting to talk about it in this context, because we had a fantastic bunch of people come in to talk about the legal risks of using outputs from these. So because you've kind of got to, if you're using ChatGPT as a wingman, you're the arbiter. The risk profile, the responsibility for action rests with you. If the machine does it itself and makes all the changes itself and publishes itself, then who do you sue? So it's an interesting territory, and risk assessments is one of those ones where I'll scratch the side of my chin and go, well, that's interesting, but who's the arbiter on that one? Who's the hallucination filter on that particular activity?
Who watches the watchman?
Stuff like that. The person doing
exactly.
It
Ipsos custodes. You know, you just got to be. You've got to read the stuff it spits out, and just don't take it, you know, at its face value, because it, you know, like any sentient system kind of thing, it could be just full of shit, just like your mates.
Accidentally sarcastic,
you know, I mean, just to be careful, read the material, be that, you know, I mean, filter to make sure it's not handed off crap.
So we've been using these kind of models at work, and that's been a bit of a question from some of the kind of the higher level staff of, you know, what are the risks, what are the pitfalls, what are the struggles, how do we address all of this kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the you know, from like an engineering point of view and things, of treating the AI like a junior member of staff. You know, if you give them some work to do, when it comes back to you, you're still going to check it, make sure it's all right, you know, rather than just
going. There's a QA for the output. I use the analogy, it's the red flag in front of the motor car right now. You know, right now, we're the human with the red flag in front of the motor car stopping and going too fast. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately when you start to trust to a sufficient level, you know, when you're putting your business, your men shed, your life, you know, those are the people around about you in the hands of something that has no consequence. It doesn't feel the consequence that you would if you make a mistake.
Yeah.
And that's a very morbid and depressing way, but, you know, that's why you've got to have this. Which your risk profile, you know, which are risk profile. If you're a big multinational corporation, you've got deep pockets and you can weather the storm, you know. So read it, check it, be the man with the red flag in front of the car for the time being, you know, until you can.
That's quite an important thing for people to remember. And that, there was an example I read probably about 6 months ago of a journalist who used ChatGPT to generate an article, and they did due diligence, and there was a quote within the article from an author, I believe. And, and then they actually contacted the source of the quote to kind of just confirm the quote, and the kind of guy was like, no, No, I've never said that. That's not me.
I think most stories and websites are written using that today. I mean, it's the case.
I think that they have been for as long as I've been alive, I think.
Yeah, they've got a hold of... I mean, the one that worries me is the lesser-known one called Quill, which they use in universities and things to check and make recommendations about your output kind of thing. It doesn't write it, but it validates what you've put through it. Starts recommending sources for these things. You know, so that one's a little nerve-wracking thing. You know, we could explain why so many papers are retracted. You know, it's just full of crap kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, but that said, as long as you're comfortable being that sanity check, you know, I mean, go for it. Or you don't care the fact it's, you know, generated half a ton of busted filament on the floor of your workshop kind of thing because you're looking to print something itself kind of thing. That's okay as long as, you know, there's no real danger to life or limb or career or happiness or the reputation of another human being.
Okay, so we've mentioned kind of, obviously there's the ability to write things like script, code. There's the ability to kind of brainstorm ideas, to get suggestions for if you are in the position that you need kind of blocks of text, whether that's a complaint letter or a policy or a health and safety document, a risk assessment. What are the other kind of currently available applications for the maker, for the average maker, for not the
automation and organization?
Okay,
things like
outsource your OCD. Is that what you just said?
Well, it's the root to the Jarvis kind of thing, isn't it? You know, the if this then that stuff. I think make.com now has a service that you just link things into. You know, so people are doing that with linking in stuff like their Gmail. And if you get a set email in from someone with X, Y, or Z in the content of it, plug that into GPT, summarize the content, put it into into your calendar or things like that. So there's a lot of those things that are opening up those pathways, you know, and there's an element of makers who are very good with their hands but not necessarily academically cerebral. So things that are great for reducing barriers to entry, translating things or summarizing things, you know, stuff like, is this a free pattern I've just got online, something I can use? Throw that detail into pattern?
Is a good
Is this, you know, it does the legalese underneath this, you know, Creative Commons statement mean that I can use this in my business? You know, you can do that kind of thing to help get through the language barriers as well.
Don't be mad, use Apache 3, that kind of thing. I mean, like I said, from what someone can do with it, I think from my perspective, is one of those is the best advice to give people is to go to Bing, go to chat, it'll pop up and just go nuts. Just ask it stupid questions and then play and realize that it'll feel like someone. Alan, Mr. Turing would be very surprised where we are with ChatGPT. But from our perspective, go have a look. Ask it to write stories. Jigsy in the chat just now says, get it to write stories for your kids. Ask it to draw you a picture of something. You know, ask it to tell you some random fact about something, and then explain that random fact.
Once it's written the story, then ask it to generate the illustrations for the story.
Exactly right.
And link it through to, you can record your voice as well and get it to read the story back out in your voice. You know, you can train
don't these models. Ask it to draw anything filthy.
Yeah, you'll get into trouble.
Get
draw
trouble.
A picture of lots of mud.
Yes. You know, I mean, that's it. It's It's really cool. Just go play. Don't be scared today of that kind of thing. And if you're talented, don't go mad and connect it to something that fires missiles. Please.
Nerf guns? Now that could be fun.
Nerf guns. Oh, hey, they were talking. Nerf tanks. Yeah. Kind of chase it. Yeah, that could go wrong. You mean once if you're connected to your 3D printer and your Nerf tank, that could go badly wrong. You know, badly wrong. Next thing you know, you've got a T-1000 made out of, you know, PLA chasing you around the garden.
you just need a hot kettle. That'll take care of that.
You'll be hacking those lawnmowers before long.
Yeah.
This is it. Don't tempt me. dead or alive, you're mowing with me. Anyway, yeah. Where were we? This was random. Sorry.
Yeah, another application. looking at uses for the kind of the average
interpreting manuals,
yeah,
and reading manuals and endless PDF documents and that kind of thing. But the one I can think of is paint, right? Why is paint so freaking complicated? Especially some of the specialist stuff, like, oh, you've got to leave it for 3 hours in this temperature and 8 hours in that temperature and stuff like that. If you could just have an AI model, read all the crap, and you just ask it a question. Say, can I paint this today? Outside.
Does the weather really matter? Yeah. Does it really matter if it's jam or cream first? These deep questions.
Hey, we've got to stay away from controversial stuff.
I mean, I think
pour this much epoxy, is it going to burn my house down?
Yes.
It's a valid question.
When my house burns down, can I call it a river house or will I be sued?
It's a wonderful phrase. It just reminds me of is that what was it the difference the two different types of incompetent, you know, there's unconsciously incompetent where you don't know that it's a dumb idea to pour that much epoxy, and unconsciously incompetent where you did know that it was probably a bad idea and you did it anyway.
I think we've all been guilty of both.
Oh, I haven't said far.
It's part of the learning curve. It's part of the learning curve.
I mean, everyone goes through those. Tinkerage because of his experiments.
The Tinkerage used to be four times the size, but it's just the
amputated.
Experimentation was holding space.
Look, I just got the TARDIS stuff wrong. Yeah, I was just trying to make it bigger on the inside rather than the
outside. How you do that? Who knows? It might come back with an answer.
I suspect the answer would just be carefully.
Yeah, I mean, from a science point of view, the potential within AI is huge, absolutely huge. But with that, we're talking about making here and kind of the idea sort of how that may help us. Where do you think bit of prediction and difficult to do because, you know, it's a fast moving landscape as it is. Where do you think things might be from an AI point of view, for makers in, say, the next kind of sort of, you know, 2 to 5 years, 3 to 5 years, what do you think is going to be around?
I don't think there's going to be a big change for makers, if I'm honest, because outside of maybe image generation, because that's quite a big thing. Because at the moment, it's all a little bit niche and you have to know where to go to find AI tools, and you have to have some practice about using the right prompts and wording and things like that to make it useful, right? And I think to get beyond that, it needs companies and manufacturers and people that have the sort of visibility to sort of take it up and integrate it into their products, into things that people will use, right? And I don't think that's going to happen quickly. I don't see the likes of DeWalt including AI tools as part of their sort of lineup. Do you know what I mean? I don't see that happening. I can see maybe online services like Instructables or Thingiverse, or, you know, maybe websites like that, perhaps integrating stuff. But I think, again, those are still a little bit niche. I don't think the impact is going to be big and quick when it comes to maker-related stuff. It's going to take, like I said, it's going to take people that have got the visibility to integrate those things, and I don't see them doing that anytime soon. I can't see what the applications are yet.
I love the idea of like DeWalt. You know, you're trying to put a 4-inch screw in with a using a drill driver, and then it says, "We notice you haven't pre-drilled, and we're struggling a little bit. So what we've done is we've automatically ordered you an impact driver that will be delivered tomorrow." This is the fifth screw you've put in today. Oh, by the way,
you need to buy a different battery pack for it.
But it still only comes in one color scheme.
Yeah. I mean, like something like that is not even, you don't need AI to say on a drill that it's over-torqued, right?
No.
The job that you're doing is too hard for it. We don't have that even, right? There's not even a red light that will come up and say, I'm struggling. You'll just hear it struggling and see it burning and smoke pouring out of it, right? Before you realize that the job that you're asking it to do is beyond it. So it's kind of things like that where you just go, well, if they're not doing that yet, they're not going to bring AI stuff out.
It's interesting because let me restart that. So one of the interesting things on the journey that we've been on is the difference between an expert system and generative. An expert system's been around a long time. The Cinian chips and Bosch tools work out what you're trying to do and adjust accordingly. They've been around a long time for that sort of thing because it's quite a finite set of parameters that are at work. Mm-hmm. But from generative to real world, is probably a shorter step than everybody would feel comfortable with. You could, with relatively low technology as an individual, couple generative outputs from Stable Diffusion, passing it through a vectoring tool set, spitting it out to Octoprint, and have a Creality CR30 output the part and keep outputting the parts. With relatively short steps, you know, just by having this conversation, it's probably a few days' work.
Mm.
So it's parallel.
Those don't know, the CR30 is a belt-based printer that will actually kind of almost, as long as you keep supplying it with filament. So if you put a 20 kilogram reel of filament, it'll just keep going until that filament runs out.
Till that filament's empty.
One after another.
It's a pain in the ass. Don't buy one. It's really cool, but don't buy one. You know, there are better. That's all I'm going to say.
Somewhere my understanding is that the bamboo printers are using kind of an AI to kind of sort of detect.
But you can do that with Octoprint right now in a Raspberry.
Yeah,
okay.
You can see that spaghetti detector. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you know. But the real difference would be is if it could tell you why it's going wrong. Looking at the parameters fed to the device and say, under this temperature condition, under this bed condition, under this type of filament that we understand, looking at the precision lag, you're getting pop suggesting your filaments. You know, I mean, get too much moisture in it. You know, you can delamination on the bed under these conditions. You know, that wingman aspect. And then,
what do I need to change?
You know, the next logical step is adjusting what's going on in the world to cope with it. If it's a soaked filament, you're screwed. But, you know, at the end of the day Eric's got two of them. see, two CR30s. But it's a really short step. It's the sort of thing you could do if you choose, versus requiring a major enterprise You know, so in the truest sense of being a maker, you could build, you know, hello, computer, make me a 3D teacup that's about 6 inches tall and 5 inches wide, and off it would go. If it's got a I forget the one of the, what's the filament machine that lets you have all the different colors and different filaments, and it's got a name.
MMU,
I think, you know, where you can have lots, you can even tell, like, we're doing carbon fiber, and the things would be absolutely brick hard. Yeah, whether you want to have a teacup made from carbon fiber.
So from that respect, the Star Trek replicator.
You're not that far away.
In extent.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got a question. Maybe this is for where Andy's leading, but some of this stuff is, you know, has been possible for a while, like you say with the Sinian chips and having a set of known parameters from experts and sensors that can be applied to a thing can be done entirely without AI. It's a flow chart and it's, you know, I know that some of the work that Duncan's doing at the minute at work can just be done with tools that aren't generative or aren't AI based. But is the buzzword of AI shining a light on stuff now because it's reduced the accessibility to do this kind of stuff and reduced the cost without having to employ experts to do this?
I think it does lower barriers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It lowers the barrier of entry to various things. Like,
If you're a business analyst, you know, I mean, I'd be making sure you had another string to your bow.
Or a copywriter.
Yeah.
Or
there's still a place for them in the swim, but the number of them definitely drops. The
skill set will have to change.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, again, we could have quite a lengthy discussion about that. I mean, that's something we've seen with successive technologies, you know, from, you know, even things like, you know, the development of the typewriter and many others, hundreds of other sort of technologies.
Gutenberg Press, it made a load of monks redundant and they didn't need to start copying manuscripts out, did they? You
know? Yeah. I think the difference so this time is
beer.
The numbers involved.
Yeah.
It's the difference is the numbers involved. It's huge. The potential is massive. It's revolutionary.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think we're only just touching the tip of the iceberg of it, really.
But the real scare, the real scare hiding in the weeds, is that some of the very large neural networks, you don't really understand how they're learning. And we'll just leave that there.
we'd be chatting for an hour, just over an hour now, for the main show. But just before we leave off the live and go on to the after show for patrons, patreon.com/makerswaffle. Just to kind of sort of summarize, kind of for the average maker, AI is something that, I mean, at this stage they could just ignore. But if it's something that's grabbed your attention, yeah, you know, there's a few possibilities on how you might use it. Whether it's kind of looking for inspiration, ideas that you can use for your art, or whether it's actually sources of material, so the generative side of things. Whether it's you're producing sort of text for you, if that's not a strength. And that's potential, particularly for those perhaps people who, yeah, have struggled with kind of the writing side of things. If you're a content producer and you want, say, a good description for your video, yeah, it's a great place to kind of get that kind of maybe help that you might not get from just going straight to Google or using things like that. So
non-judgmental help.
So the probably the basic advice is find. Go and access things like ChatGPT, Stable Diffusion, or even just things like, if you've got Photoshop, go into that and play around with that from the image point of view, or Canva and the AI within that, and have a play. Try things out and just see what it might do for your particular type of making, whether it's there for inspiration, aiding you with your images, or whether it's aiding you with your text, and or maybe it's you want to start introducing some electronics into projects, and you the coding side of things may be something that might be a
or ask us for fantastic chat uplinks and dad jokes. Yeah, if nothing better, go and have some fun. Ask it for some dad jokes. Go on.
Hang on a minute. I'm just about okay with putting copywriters and you know all of these other content.
You're putting dads out like because dads don't invent dad jokes. Dad jokes tend to be to be inherited from their dads, kind of thing. Yeah, you know. Okay, so it's like what's invisible and smells of carrots. Bugs Bunny's farts. I mean, it's an absolute legendary, but it's a legendary dad joke. Go and ask ChatGPT for some.
Oh dear. I'd like to thank Duncan from Little Hobby Shop and Dale from Maple Tree Studios for coming on and sharing some of their expertise in kind of the AI world.
Pleasure as always.
We will dive off now into the after show and maybe talk about maybe bit more about business to do with it. So, business side of things. So, bye, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.
So, are we going to build this like AI scroll saw?
Who says I haven't?